And in his in one of his talks, he gives the different qualities that are needed for become an awakened being, to become an enlightened being. And the first of these is aspiration. We need to have in our mind an attitude that aspires to enlightenment. And even though that may seem to be far away from us, you know, we think, oh, you know, those people can become enlightened, but I can't. But still, we need to have the aspiration in the mind that we want to follow the path and the teaching of the Buddha and achieve the lofty goal of Nibbana and come out of suffering. And that, I think that's the most important teaching. So I'd like to advise that you have this aspiration in your mind every time you practice and even during your everyday life. One of my teachers, my main teacher was a Burmese Sayadaw monk teacher, and his name was Sayadaw Ukundala. And he said to me one day, he was saying, I was offering him dana, and which I did quite a lot because I love to give dana to the Sayadaw. As you, I know you, you people at Unibuds are also inclined in that direction, so that's excellent. But he said to me, when you're offering dana, you have to make the aspiration or the affirmation, may by this offering of generosity, may I attain to the highest level of Nibbana and achieve Nibbana. So in the act of offering dana, what we are doing here is building up the momentum that will propel us, if you like, towards the goal of the Buddha's teachings, which is to come out of suffering. So I'd like to offer this for you, you know, for you to practice with. So whenever you're offering dana, that you aspire to the highest teachings, to the highest goal of Buddhist practice. May by this offering, may I attain to the highest level of practice and come out of suffering. But our talk is not going to be on that tonight. It's going to be on mindfulness. And I'd like to talk about the purpose of mindfulness, the function of mindfulness, and a little bit to do with the characteristics of mindfulness as well. And we'll do some practice, so you have a firm understanding of how to practice mindfulness. Now, it's interesting when you think about the Buddha himself. As you well know, in the life story of the Buddha practiced concentration techniques for 6 years in the forest in Uruvela in India near Buddha Gaya. He wasn't actually at that time practicing mindfulness. He was practicing concentration techniques, because at that time in India, they thought that it was concentration meditations that were going to bring them to the highest goals. But the Buddha himself was not satisfied. He practiced to the highest level of concentration, attaining all the jhanas, all the absorption states of mind. But still, when he'd come out of these states of concentration, he would still feel that his mind was not quite complete. You know, his mind was not quite at peace. There was still some residue of greed, hatred, and delusion in the mind, and he wasn't satisfied with that. He wanted complete liberation from the defilements of the mind, the kilesas of the mind, this greed, hatred, and delusion, which is the cause of suffering in the mind. So he left the ascetics, as you well know, and he went and sat on, took the milk rice and went in under the Bodhi tree and made an aspiration. I will not get up from this seat until I've attained to the highest level of that I can achieve as a human being. And it was at that point when he started to meditate, that he realized the concentration meditation wasn't going to do it for him, that he needed to use something else as well as concentration. And he decided that instead of closing his mind down, because concentration does that, it closes the mind, it suppresses the kalesa that arises in the mind, this greed, hatred, and delusion, which is the cause of suffering. He instead said, oh, well, I'll just sit and I'll watch and I'll take notice of and I'll observe what's arising and passing away in the sense doors, through the sense doors. So he sat, and there's many mythological stories of how the Buddha practiced that night. And we won't go into that now, but as I just want to say that he opened his mind to whatever the present moment experience was for him. So the function of mindfulness, the purpose of mindfulness practice, is to rid the mind of the greed, hatred, and delusion. It's to remove completely from the mind greed, hatred, and delusion, and the many other destructive emotions that arise in the mind. So the Buddha discovered that when he did this, that after some hours of sitting, that his mind was free. You know, he faced all the demons in that short period of time. And he could do it in a short period of time, because it's not actually a short period of time. He'd been practicing for years and lifetimes. So when he came to this momentous moment, sitting under the Bodhi tree, the conditions were ready for him at that time. And he was able to observe the mind fully, without wavering, just watching the movements of the mind as things come and they went. And as you all know, you've probably read the life of the Buddha. You know, he was attacked by Mara, and all kinds of situations arose for him in the mind, didn't they? You know, and he watched, and he didn't move from his seat. He just kept watching. And so he opened his mind to experience, but without the reactive patterns that we normally have. There was not the same habitual tendencies in the mind to react with like and dislike to a situation. Do you understand this? That was the secret to his success, if you like. And it's said by the dawn, when the dawn light came, his mind was completely free, and no condition could arise in the Buddha's mind that would cause greed, hatred, and delusion to arise anymore. All attachment was put asunder. There was nothing there that was going to cause him suffering anymore. He was completely free. And he discovered that it was mindfulness, or this ability to pay attention to the mind, to recognize firstly what's in the mind, because mindfulness has many definitions. One of the definitions is to recognize. And that means that he recognized what was in his mind, but without the reactive patterns, without the judgments, without the identification, but just watching the flow of experience as it comes and goes. Watching the flow of experience as it comes and goes. Can we do that? Oh, very hard to do that. We usually find ourselves identifying, judging, you know, reacting in some way to the patterns of the mind, if you like. And so we get caught up in all kinds of problems and troubles by doing that, because we identify with the movements of the mind, with the idea of self, the identity. This is mine. This is real. And the Buddha discovered that wasn't real. It was just thoughts coming and going, nothing to cling on to. So this was the beginning of mindfulness. And he spent the next 45 years teaching this. method of practice and of mindfulness. So it's quite amazing. When I started to learn about learn about meditation practice, it took a little while because I was also interested in concentration practice, and I really thought that concentration practice was the only path. But then my Thai teacher at the time in England started to teach me mindfulness, you know, to pay attention to each and every moment, present moment experiences that's arising. And mindfulness, and that changed the way I viewed my meditation practice. It opened me up to learning to observe the different experiences that come and go when we see, we hear, we smell, we taste, we touch, we think. You know, it's all about being aware of the six sense doors and the impacts on the six sense doors. And can we be there without reacting to it, without judging it, the experience, without identifying with the experience, but just be there for each? It's a very simple thing, really, this meditation practice. It's just the bare attention to an experience that's arising in the present moment. This is mindfulness. Mindfulness means to know. It means to know what's in the mind simply, but without, as I expressed earlier, as I talked about earlier, without our habitual habit patterns. That's what it means. So recognize. It means also remembering. Now that's another one that's interesting too. And people often hear this and they think, oh, it's memory. But it's not memory at all. What it means here, this definition of mindfulness, is to remember when you've gone away from the present moment object. Now that's in itself is interesting, because are we ever in the present moment? You have to look at yourself and see, no, I'm not. I'm often dreaming and drifting and getting caught up in discursive thinking and stories in the mind. We're not in the present moment at all, are we? You know, the whole day from the moment we wake up in the morning, we're planning, imagining, we're reflecting on something, we're working out things we've got to do in our life situation. We're not in the present moment. So the Buddha said that our training is to bring the attention into the present moment and observe the present moment experience. So remembering here means that when you recognize that you have gone off the meditation objective, you know, of the present moment, to come back and start again. Can you understand this? Yeah, you can wave at me. So, recognition, remembering. Commonly, mindfulness is taught as paying attention. And I guess that definition itself, or in itself, is fine. You know, we need to pay attention to the present moment experience. And that's what we try to do in our training, don't we? And we try to bring our attention to the present moment. Now, this word mindfulness, the Pali word for it is sati. You probably have heard this many times before, S-A-T-I, sati. The ability of the mind to stay on the present moment. And in the definition of mindfulness, it's mentioned that sati, and there's another word in Pali which is combined with it, is called pasana. Satipatthana. Actually, satipatthana is really the Pali definition of mindfulness. And it's a compound word of two, sati and patthana. And patthana means a close attention, you know, a presence of mind. Sati might mean attention, and patthana means a close attention, a careful attention to what it is you're experiencing in the present moment. But first we have to recognize. So that's the first definition of mindfulness, to recognize what's in the mind. Can we recognize what's in the mind? And can we pay attention when we do recognize? And can we know when we've gone off and remembered to come back to the present moment? So that's really the definitions of mindfulness. This is what we're trying to achieve. Now, mindfulness in itself is found, you could go on forever talking about mindfulness, I think. But mindfulness is found in many of the teachings of the Buddha, particularly pertaining to the meditation practice. It's found in the Noble Eightfold Path, isn't it? In the group that's concerned with meditation practice, right mindfulness, right effort, right mindfulness is there, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. This is how the Buddha advised us to practice in the practice of the Noble Eightfold Path. Right mindfulness is there, right there. When we're practicing our vipassana meditation, we're practicing, right mindfulness. And we're also practicing right effort, and we're also developing concentration, but deep concentration, which comes about through knowing the mind. It's found in the factors of enlightenment. And the Buddha pointed out there were 7 factors of enlightenment. As we go through the practice and as we start progressing with our practice towards enlightenment, we start to develop these particular factors which propel us towards enlightenment, if you like. And the first of these factors is mindfulness. It's there. With the 7 factors of enlightenment, I think this is really interesting. When the meditation practice starts to get moving along quite well, starts gaining a lot of energy, we start to, how would you put it? The mindfulness becomes very clear and very strong. The mind's not flittering around so much. It's able then to stay on the objects of meditation that we wish to observe. And these particular factors arise in the mind which encourage us and propel us. They're like an energy or a power that builds up in the mind and propels us towards enlightenment, if you like. In the practice itself, there's another group called the 5 controlling faculties. And in that group, they're various conditions that need to be balanced before we can progress in the practice. And these 5 controlling faculties, they're called the indriya in Pali. And they're faith, if you like, or confidence, energy, concentration, wisdom, and what else? Of course, mindfulness. Now, faith and wisdom need to be balanced, or confidence and wisdom need to be balanced, and energy and concentration need to be balanced. The balancing factor is mindfulness. It's like if you want to use some imagery to give you a feel for what these 5 controlling faculties are like as you're going through the path of progress. If you can imagine when you go to the beach in summer and you see the surf club people going out on the surf boats, and these surf boats usually have 4 people. There's 4 oarsmen, and at the back of the boat there's a person that's called a sweep. He's got the big oar at the back of the boat, so to keep the boat in the right, going in the right direction and not wiping out. Well, you've got faith. You've got faith and wisdom as the 2 front oarsmen, and then in the back 2 oarsmen, you've got energy and concentration. And the sweep is right mindfulness. It keeps the boat going in the right direction. And all the oarsmen, if they're out of sync, the boat's going to tip over and wipe out. And so right mindfulness is there to keep us balanced. So that's right mindfulness is really the most important factor that the Buddha mentions. And the beauty of his enlightenment was he was able to discover this for himself and come out of suffering and achieve the purpose of the practice, which is to reach the higher goals. So mindfulness will take us, I think, what's this talk is called, coming out of darkness. Mindfulness by its nature helps us to come out of darkness because mindfulness clears the mind. It has many functions. It tidies the mind up. I've got a list of things here for you. Which I can't find now. I thought I had that. So it helps us tidy the mind up. You know, when mindfulness is becoming more mature by dint of your repeated practice of observing the present moment objects, you start to notice, oh, my mind is becoming more tidy. You know, when you start to look at your mind now, maybe not, I don't know, the Unibuds people, they may not have untidy minds. You might be completely tidy in the mind. But if you look very closely, that's probably not the case. Your minds are like an untidy dressing room, untidy dressing, a cupboard with all your clothes in different places and everything out of order. But what happens when mindfulness is functioning well? It tidies the mind and brings things into order. And that's one of the benefits of mindfulness. Another benefit of mindfulness practice, it helps to untangle the knots in the mind. You know, do you find this? Often we find that our mind gets really knotted and conflicted, you know, with our different emotions, you know, negative and positive. You know, we're all day we're dealing with this dichotomy of negative emotions, positive emotions. One moment it's negative, the next moment it's not. It's positive and we're happy again. We're like this roller coaster in the mind going all over the place. And mindfulness can help us tidy the mind and untangle the knots in the mind. It also helps us, you'll find that when mindfulness is working well, it has a certain restraining component to it. So if you're about to say something or do something which is not useful or not beneficial for people, it stops you from doing it. This is one of the things I noticed when I first started to practice. Suddenly there was like there was a break on the mind. It was like there was a red light in the mind. And I didn't really have to do anything. It just started to happen in a natural way. And the beauty of mindfulness is that these benefits that I'm talking about start to happen effortlessly. In the beginning, we need to make an effort to know the mind. But after a while, mindfulness kicks in and it starts to work of its own accord. And suddenly there's a break on the mind. Oh, I was just about to speak something or say something that was unwholesome, but you won't say it. You know, there's that moment of space in the mind that clears the mind. It's just amazing when this happens. So another characteristic of mindfulness is this restraint that it brings about. So your words, your actions, your thoughts, there's room in the mind again. The mind moves so quickly, so fast, in terms of Buddhist psychology. It's all mapped out, but I won't go into that now. How fast it moves. And we can't keep up with it. And that's why we get into trouble. You know, we identify very quickly with an emotion. We react very quickly with an emotion. Someone says something, we don't like it, we get angry, suddenly we strike out. We've got no control over the mind. But mindfulness helps you have control over the mind. You're able to, because mindfulness catches up to the natural speed of the mind, if you see what I mean. And you can be there for each and every moment that's happening. You can know very quickly when anger's in the mind. And instead of the reactive patterns that we normally have, it's just like you're holding in your hand a hot coal and you're able to let it go. Without mindfulness, we're not able to let it go. It just stays in the hand and burns us. Something like that in Burma, Thailand, countries like that, they often give the imagery of the hot coal in the hand. And we don't want to let go. We hold on to it because we identify. We identify with what's in our minds, even if it's unwholesome. But with mindfulness, we can let go of the coal and the mind can become cool and calm and peaceful. And we don't say things that are, we don't speak with a negative mind. And the mind becomes beautiful, if you like. And I think that that's the purpose of the meditation, is for the mind to become beautiful and for our thoughts to become beautiful. You know, we want to do away with the destructive emotions in the mind. And so we can allow the positive thoughts to come into the mind, such as compassion and kindness and tolerance, don't we? But we're not going to be able to do that, even with practicing of loving kindness or practicing of the different Brahmas, Brahma Viharas. There's still a possibility for the defilements to come into the mind. It's only with mindfulness that we can eventually remove them for good, and become Buddhas, if you like. Something like that is how it works. So the tidying of the mind, the stopping and slowing down, mindfulness allows us to stop and slow down. That's the restraining aspect of the practice. It's like the red light practice. You know, I often use mindfulness training when I'm driving around. It's really wonderful practice. I call it red light meditation. You know how when you're driving around, someone slows up in front of you, find the mind getting irritated, or you're impatient, you want the red light to change to green because I'm in a hurry, I've got to go somewhere, I'm late for university or dinner or something like that. Well, I use the red lights and watch my mind, you know, how it gets upset or how it gets impatient or how it gets irritated. And with mindfulness, you may feel at some point or you may become aware of these little moments of irritation or anger or impatience or something like that. And you drop it and the mind becomes calm and peaceful. And you just wait for the green light. That's what mindfulness does. It cools the mind. They talk about Nibbana, or the awakened mind, as a mind that's cool. They often refer to it as the cool mind of Nibbana, or they describe it as the cool mind of Nibbana. And even when you're at a red light, you can be in Nibbana in that moment. Or you can be in the hell realms. It depends on how you observe. If you allow the mind to keep going with its usual traits of being angry or irritated or something like this, then you're in the hell realms. But if you allow the mind to cool and stop its normal functioning in that direction, well, then the mind is in Nibbana in that moment. Isn't that the case? Quiet and peaceful. It's beautiful. So mindfulness has many, many wonderful functions. But how do you practice it? I'm sure all of you have some idea of how to practice because you've done a lot of practice now. But the way that the Buddha taught us to practice was to practice what he calls the four foundations of mindfulness, or the four exercises that can bring a real positive benefit to the mind. He said, we need to come into the present moment, as I've been saying all for the whole lecture. But how do we come into the present moment? We need to train the mind. It's not something that just, you know, if you want to become a PhD student at the University of New South Wales, you have to work hard at it, don't you? If you want to become enlightened and you want to become peaceful, you have to work hard at it. It takes some effort. And so the Buddha gave a path that was, described how we can start to observe our mind more easily. And he said we need to observe in four ways. And he called this the four foundations of mindfulness, or the four applications of mindfulness, the four focuses of mindfulness. These are the exercises we need to train ourselves in. And we need to do this with commitment. You know, attitude needs to be strong. You know, this is what I'm doing. You're belonging to UniBuds at Uni New South Wales. This is the ideal opportunity because you have a group, a sangha there, that can practice together and can go through the path of training. And this is very, very important. So these four foundations of mindfulness, and I'll just talk about them briefly. We'll have to have another night where we go more fully into it. The first exercise, I think, is really important. It's like the grounding of the practice. If you can become grounded in the first foundation of mindfulness, the practice will flow very easily. And that first foundation of mindfulness is simple. It's being aware of the body. And in the first, it's called kaya in Pali, the body, kaya, K-A-Y-A. We start to pay attention to sit to what posture we're in. You know, what am I doing now? I'm sitting, I'm standing, I'm walking, I'm running, I'm reaching. What am I doing now? That's it. That's it. That's the teaching. Can I be aware and be mindful of what I'm doing now? You're sitting in the chair in the lecture hall. Well, you're not anymore. You're sitting in front of the computer. But can you be aware of just sitting? Feel the body. Turn the attention inside to observing the body. Well, what am I doing now? Or is your mind spacing out, getting caught up in stories and discursive thinking, planning for the future? The important part of this training in the practice is every now and again just to tune into the body and know what is happening in the moment. Okay? So when you're sitting there, you just become aware. What am I doing now? It's really wonderful. The mind becomes quiet and peaceful. You're just aware of the body. What am I doing? I'm sitting. Or I'm standing. You're waiting for the bus to come. You're waiting in the queue at the cafeteria. Instead of letting the mind roam all around the university, can't you just be aware of standing? What's standing like? Feel it. Become aware of it. Know it. Sitting, standing, lying down even. You know, when you lay down somewhere, you just be aware of lying down and feel that, become aware of the body. When you're reaching for a door, when you're putting your clothes on, when you're drinking a cup of coffee, smoothie or something like that, having something to eat, you can be aware of eating. you just take a moment or two just to be aware of eating, even when you're with a group of people or your classmates. You can just turn inside and go, oh, I'm eating. What is that like? What's it like to eat? Right? And so you can be aware of chewing, the taste of the food. You can see how your desires come into the mind through that activity of just being aware of chewing. Our teacher, Mahasi Sayadaw, is a very great meditation master in Burma. He said one of the best exercises in training the mind to be mindful is to observe eating. And when you practice in the meditation centers in Burma and in Thailand, they ask you to observe eating. So you eat very slowly when you're there. You try to watch all the movements entailed in just eating a meal. It's really amazing. And Mahasi would say, in his instructions, he'd say, during the process of eating your lunch, can you just tune into chewing or become aware of chewing? It sounds ridiculous, doesn't it? But it's part of the practice. And you find yourself, really becoming really aware of chewing. And so many things, so much can be revealed just with chewing. Another teacher of mine, his name was Anagarika Manindra. He was in India. And he would say, when the mindfulness is strong and the awareness is very sensitive, just with the turning of the head, you can become enlightened. I said, really? Okay, I'll try that. I don't know if it actually happened, but putting your shoes on. That was another thing, because when you're in the meditation center, you've got to take your shoes on and off all the time, when you go into the meditation hall or the shrine room or something like that. He said, use that as an exercise. When you're in Burma practicing, they bow every time before they have a meditation session. And you'll have maybe 6 or 7 one-hour sittings and six walking periods, practicing walking meditation. And every time you go into the meditation hall, you have to bow. And so my teacher said to me, I want you to be aware of bowing every time you go in. So that was the first foundation of mindfulness, wasn't it? Just what am I doing now? I'm bowing. Little things like that are part of the training. I'm offering this to you so you can train yourself well, so you can choose something that is going to be, another way of training the mind is that I was asked to do was whenever I'd reach for a door, I had to be aware of the movement of reaching for the door and the turning of the knob like this. And that doesn't sound very esoteric, does it? Or exotic. How am I going to get enlightened by being aware of reaching for a door? But it works. You just reach your door. So you can devise something for you to train yourselves in mindfulness. Something that's suitable. If it's one or two things in your everyday life, pay attention to it and see what happens. So mindfulness of the body, if you can become grounded in this mindfulness of the body, that really opens up the other three foundations. Because what happens is that your perception becomes clearer. And as you're sitting, for example, when you're doing the formal sitting meditation, when you start to become more aware of the sensations in the body, how the body actually feels, because your awareness is becoming stronger. You become more aware and you can feel the different sensations, whether they're painful or not painful, whether they're neutral. So you pay attention to it. The training that I was given in this one, I'd like to offer it to you, is that I mentioned in the the first foundation of mindfulness, that you first become aware that you're sitting. But then you leave your attention on the sitting posture, and what do you experience? Different sensations. So my teacher would ask me that if I was sitting in a chair, that I'd become aware of not only the posture, but what did I, the touch sensation of the arm on the chair. That was the training in mindfulness. Just things like that you can become aware of. So the feelings are important, but in this sense, it's the physical sensation that you experience. Olivia has her hand on her chin. Can you feel the sensation? Leave the hand there, Olivia. Can you become aware of the sensation? You're paying attention. You understand? Can you feel it? What do you feel? You can unmute.
I can feel the hand there.
You can, yeah, but keep it there for a moment.
Okay.
Can you feel a little heat?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Something else? Some other sensation coming up?
Pressure.
Pressure, good. Okay, good. That kind of, that's good. That's what we're training ourselves in, is to sensitize the perception. Very good. Excellent. Yeah, that's the second foundation of mindfulness. It's called Vedana or Vedana, Vedana Nipassana, Vedana, being aware of the feelings, whether they're pleasant, unpleasant or neutral. So was that experience pleasant or unpleasant when you noticed it? In other words, we can notice the reaction to the experience. So we're watching the reaction to it, and that is then the condition for desire to arise, which is then the condition for problems to come into the mind, craving to come into the mind. You see what I mean? And then the third foundation of mindfulness is observing the thoughts and emotions in the mind. And we become much better with mindfulness at seeing our thoughts and emotions and not getting carried away. And this is what I was talking about with the stopping and slowing and down and restraining. You know, instead of getting carried away with our thoughts, emotions, oh, I want this, I'm having this, I don't like this, I'm unhappy, I'm sad, something or other, you know, some other emotion. We can settle into just observing how these things come and go in the mind. These mental states come and go in the mind like clouds in the sky. We're not buying into them so heavily as we usually do. So that's a training itself. We can start to watch our thoughts and emotions as they come in. You might choose one that's particularly strong for you and try and watch it. Are you a person that gets irritated easily? I mean, when I started, I was very quick-tempered. Someone would say something, I didn't like it, I'd react in some way to it. When my teacher asked me to start watching that particular mental state, and gradually I was able to let the coal go in the mind, the hot ember in the hand, if you like. So we start to watch the emotions in the mind. And then also we can start then opening the whole thing up to the six sense doors. And we can be aware of seeing, hearing, tasting, smelling, touching. And it all sounds as though it may be, and our reactions to the experience of the external stimuli impacting on the sense door and our reactions to it. Can you see that? We get a closer look at what's actually happening and watching our reactive patterns that we develop over all these years or lifetimes two particular experiences that touch our consciousness, or that we become conscious of, something like that. So this training of the four foundations of mindfulness is the central and core teaching of the Buddha. And this is how we need to practice. We need to practice by training ourselves to be aware or be mindful of the body, of the sensations, of the mind states, of the impacts of the on the sense doors. And little by little and gradually you'll be able to see the benefit of doing this. The mind becomes clear. This vipassana means seeing things clearly. The definition of vipassana is seeing things clearly, or allowing us, and mindfulness allows us to do this. By activating mindfulness, we become more aware. Mindfulness and awareness are often given as the same, but it's not quite correct. Mindfulness is an activity, it's something we do to allow our already, to allow our mind, our awareness to become clearer. We already have awareness, but often it's sluggish and we can't see things very clearly. The activity of mindfulness allows us to become more aware. It's like cause and effect. Mindfulness is the cause and the effect is the increase in awareness. Awareness then allows understanding to arise in the mind because we can see more clearly. It's something like, I'm sure you've had this in your lectures, that the teacher will be rattling on and you don't know exactly what they're talking about. You can't quite get it. And then over a period of time, or in an instant, you'll go, oh yeah, I understand now what that teacher's talking about. You understand what I'm saying here? You'll get it. And so that's what we try to achieve, is to get it for ourselves. And that's wisdom. And this is what the Buddha talked about. It's the goal of meditation practice is understanding and wisdom arising in the mind. Yeah. So I think that's enough. I've probably bored you to tears. But I wanted to give you an overview of what mindfulness is and what it does and its characteristics. And time is getting on. I think we're going way over our time. So what we might do is we might actually practice a little bit for 5 minutes or so. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's completely
fine. Yeah? Okay. So keeping in mind, with your meditation practice, you want to keep it really simple. You know, we don't want to complicate things with our meditation practice. Let's just try to keep in mind sitting and observing. Sitting and observing. That's what we're doing. We're just sitting and observing as much as we possibly can. And in the beginning, of course, that's quite difficult. But gradually over a period of time, you'll find the mindfulness becoming stronger and you can see more things more clearly. You all will probably have your meditation practices. I'm sure you've had a lot of teachers come to UniBuds and taught you many different techniques and methods. So if you want to continue with that, you're certainly welcome to do that. But I'll show you the method that I use and that I have taught at UniBuds before. And it's a very simple method. Often in meditation practice, they teach you to observe the breath coming through the nostrils, in and out, and you start to use the breath as your primary object of meditation. But in the method of meditation I was taught, we use the rising and falling movement of the abdomen as our primary object. And that is the first foundation of mindfulness of the body, to start with. So we're just going to do a few minutes of mindfulness of rising and falling at the abdomen. Now, I'll guide you with this. I'm not going to branch out into the other foundations of mindfulness. I just want to see if you can stay with the rising and falling. So sit. It's important in meditation to sit with your back quite straight and certainly the head quite straight. You know, not to let the head droop too much. Perhaps just the little dip of the chin, but especially to try and keep the head quite straight. And this is really helpful in developing mindfulness and concentration. You keep the back quite straight, the head quite straight, the hands in the lap, the right on top of the left, the thumbs touching. And keep that, try and keep your hands close up to the body. You want a nice, solid posture for meditation. And take a couple of just long breaths. Breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out, calming the mind, relaxing the mind. Letting go of the past activities of the day. The future has not come. We bring our attention now inward. It's an inner attention. In the first moment or few moments, you know, if you want to adjust the posture, please do that. But then try and sit still with little movement, if any. Big breath in and out through the nostrils, but then bring your attention to the abdomen, just above the belly button. You direct your attention there. And can you become aware as you keep your attention on that area of the movement of the abdomen as you cause by the breathing in and breathing out? You'll notice that there's a rising movement or an expanding movement, a contracting movement as it falls down again. Here we're not trying to control anything, it's just a natural breathing. Our training is to become aware of the breathing, of that movement, from the beginning through the middle to the end of the rising movement, and the beginning, the middle, and the end of the falling movement, as continuously as possible, not missing a rising or a falling. A rising or a falling. To help us do that, we can use a soft mental label in the mind. So we say to ourselves, rising concurrently with the rising movement, falling concurrently with the falling movement, rising, falling. And see if you can keep up. Mine will wander quite a bit. But for now, don't worry about that. Just bring your attention. As soon as you recognize that it's gone off, bring it back. And become aware of the movement. Expanding, contracting. Expanding, contracting. Rising, falling. Using the mental label, rising, falling, to help you stop floating off. What are you aware of? Watching the rising and falling. Try to take an interest in it, in this movement, the sensation of movement. completely relaxed, just watching like the Buddha. Just watching, noticing, becoming aware of. Feel the movement, rising, falling, follow it up, follow it down. Where's your attention now? Is it drifted away, or is it on the object of meditation, which is the rising and falling movement of the abdomen? Just bring your attention back. Feel the movement, rising, falling, rising, falling, rising, falling. What are you aware of within the rising and falling? Thank you. I'm sure you're all probably fully enlightened beings now with that few minutes of meditation practice.
That was very refreshing.
All right.
I think there's one question.
Yeah.
Oh, so Mabel asks, is mindfulness always linked to meditation?
Always. It is. Yeah. I mean, you often in English, of course, they'll say, oh, you know, be mindful of something. You know, I left my keys or I've done something, you know, that I'm not mindful of. But it has similarities, of course. But yes, mindfulness is. Always linked to meditation practice.
And also another question. When you were saying about like training mindfulness, did you mean about like going to like mindfulness retreat or anything, or you just like meditate at home? So what was the context, and did we need teacher for that?
Look, in my own experience, I found it very useful to have a teacher for the first 6 months, I was in London at the time, and this was many years ago, and I went every Wednesday night to the Thai temple in London, and then I would practice at home, and I did it. I actually practiced at home. I was living in an apartment with a whole lot of Australian backpackers, but I had a small room, and I actually did it. I practiced at home. I practiced, half an hour. I practiced 10 minutes walking meditation and 20 minutes sitting meditation consecutively, morning and night. And I did it, and then I'd go and report to my teacher, and it was just wonderful. And I actually did do that. So you can practice at home. But when I had the opportunity, I went to the monastery. I became a monk. And then I went to the monastery and practiced. And then I moved from there. I went to the meditation centers and practiced 10-day retreats, 1-month retreats, this sort of thing. So I think my advice to you would be certainly practice at home. Even if you were to do 20 minutes a day, that would be really helpful, for you. And if you could keep your attention on the rising and falling movement while you're doing that and build the concentration up, that'll be really helpful. And then in your everyday life, as I was describing earlier about just bringing mindfulness into your everyday life, what am I doing now? Olivia's sitting with a hand like this. Can I be aware of that sensation? There's little things like that. That's meditation. And people think, oh, no, I can't do this because I need to go off to the cave and sit in a retreat for 3 years, 3 months, 3 days, etc., etc. But you don't. You just need to bring it into what am I doing now? Yeah. And that's the training. But when you do have an opportunity and you can go and do a longer retreat in a meditation center, absolutely, because that's more refined, if you like. So I would advise you to do that. But don't wait until you've got the opportunity, because it's in the here and now where there's dukkha, suffering, and you can come out of that by being mindful. So you need to know what your mind's doing and what your body's doing. And so you've got to be aware of these four foundations of mindfulness in the everyday life, which is why I spent a long time on being aware of the body, because the mind's hard to watch in the beginning. The body's a grosser object. It's more easily observed. And you can observe the sensations in the body. As you're sitting there, what's happening? Waiting for something. I can observe the body sitting and the sensation of the touch sensation of the buttocks on the cushion, just for a moment. You're sitting with your friends, laughing and telling jokes, but you can still be aware of the sensation. Or you can be aware of your hand flapping around. You don't have to tell anyone what you're doing. You're just doing it, and you be aware. Like that is how I practice. And that's how I did it anyway. I definitely practiced in my home, in my room. And it was very good.
Yep. So when we say mindfulness, it essentially means like meditation, but probably not the image of like just sitting meditation like what we did, but just maybe like knowing what we're doing. Is that right?
Exactly right. Knowing what you're doing, whether you're sitting in formal meditation or whether you're sitting having a cup of coffee.
Thank you.
It takes a little while for the jargon to understand what it is, and I think actually that was a very good question, because it's one of the most difficult things for the student to understand, because they think they've got to be in the meditation center. But they don't have to be in the meditation center. That's useful and helpful, but you've got to understand that it's that moment you need to be aware of, wherever you are. Yeah. That's good. I'm glad you got
it. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Yeah. Okay. All right. We better stop here. It's time for dinner.
Okay.
I have a very nice Indonesian dinner waiting for me. So,
yeah. Sounds good. Okay. I will just quickly wrap up then. I'll share my screen again.
You've all gone.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
There you are. Okay.
Can you see my screen? Okay. All right. So I'll just quickly go to our upcoming activities. We have Chinese Dharma Talk next week. The topic is What is the Bodhinine? The speaker is Venerable Neng Rong. And the time is from 7 to 8. The Zoom link is available on our Facebook page. If you have any question, you can contact Mobile. And then our English Dharma Talk next week. The topic is The Beauty of Letting Go. The speaker is Rosianna Lim. So the link is the same time as well. And if you have any question, you can contact me. And we have our biggest event of the year coming up next. So I'll invite JC to talk about this.
Are you able to do, is that a face-to-face thing?
Yeah, we'll go to that as well.
Hi everyone, I'm JC. I will just go through this very quick. Some of you might know that we are preparing for Bodhinine this few months, and this year because of the conditions, we are doing it online for the very first time. If you guys can look into the chat, I've posted the link to Bodhinine event page. So any important information will be posted on the event page, and then you can have a look at that. The date is 3rd to 4th of October. And basically what we'll do is to show a series of videos that explains a Buddhism theme, which this year is going to be mindfulness. And it's also for us to celebrate our 40th anniversary.
Sadi. 40th anniversary. All right, I'm going to leave you. I'd like to leave you with a little metta. May you be happy and peaceful and successful in your life. May you be free from suffering.
Thank you very much
for the talk. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. If I can leave. Yeah, I'm gone. See, that's like Nibbana. Bye-bye.